And thanks for joining me this evening. I'm Aaron Hay. You're listening to Mizzou Music on Classical 90.5 FM. I am joined through the miracle of technology after a few difficulties by MU's professor of choral conducting, R. Paul Crabb, and graduate student in the choral program, Michael Sauer. Guys, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Aaron.
Doing well. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. We wanted to come on tonight and just have a conversation about kind of not just the choral department, but the modern choral repertoire and how it relates to kind of the classical choral repertoire and a whole lot more. So thanks to both of you for coming on today. And tell me a little bit about the modern choral repertoire as it is.
Yeah, Aaron, it's great to be here. Thank you for allowing us to come in on this Zoom Music episode. It's been a very interesting, I'd say, over the past 20 or 30 years, we've seen in the choral area quite a bit of repertoire become available to us that includes much of the music that would have formerly been considered sort of outside of the mainstream repertoire. So we've had music coming in from China or from a repertoire that was written in formerly Eastern European countries or from various countries in Africa. And this repertoire has added a great deal of richness to what we are exposed to, and in some ways it just introducing us to different musics and different cultures. I would say in the past 5 to 10 years, we've started to become, I think, more relevant in terms of social commentary, social discussion, and that we have now decided that as a part of the arts, of course, have always been a part of culture. Arts have always been a part of what we reflect as part of humanity and who we are within the world community. And that's become, I think, even more focused here, particularly in the past 5 years or so. It's been a really rich addition for us because of the new ideas that it exposes. And in the academic area, it gives us great opportunity to think about who we are, think about our relationship to other people, to other nationalities, to other ethnicities, to other cultures. How do we relate to that? And how do arts form that bridge? How do arts become that kind of connecting tissue between these various cultures? It's just been, I can't tell you how exciting it is to be a part of this movement.
That's amazing. And in a normal year, you would have actually gotten to go and travel with the choir as well and go and expand the students through travel and through interaction with other countries and other choral groups as well.
Right. I mean, one of our plans was, through my dear colleague in international office, Gary Doe, we had an exchange with a university in Inner Mongolia scheduled for May of 2020. Yeah, it was great timing on my part, wasn't it? who would have seen this problem? But anyways, we would have been in that university. They would have hosted us. We would have shared our music with them. They would have shared their music with us. And this is the kind of thing that I know even so many years ago on my trip and my current trips to various cultures, it opens one's eyes not only about other cultures, about oneself, and it makes you see yourself, your own culture in different ways. So it's just a fantastic, broadening, eye-opening experience for students as well as for me. And I think it's an important part of education because the world right now, of course, it's kind of shut down, but it is a small world and there's no other way but to figure out ways to come together and work together to make it a better place.
And Michael, you're the director of Hit Street Harmony on top of being a grad student, so you've got a relatively, probably a full platter yourself there. How does that relate to like a small choral ensemble?
Yeah, and again, thank you for having us on, Aaron.
Sure.
It's been a really interesting path, last year being a singer in the group, and then this year being the director of Hit Street Harmony, and being able to think about the program myself and what are ways in which I can kind of contribute to what Dr. Crabb was talking about in exploring various cultures and different points of view that aren't always necessarily haven't always been highlighted and represented in the mainstream choral realm. And so History Harmony has traditionally been a vocal jazz ensemble, obviously a very rich American tradition. But I would say in the last few years, with the previous director, Mark Estrell Ruff, and myself kind of continuing what he started, is kind of opening that umbrella up a little bit more to include other things as well as jazz, include other genres of music that continue to explore the other cultures that are extremely prevalent in American society, so that we can, I believe, help shine a light and contribute to the discussions that are contemporarily happening in the country. And in conversations with Dr. Crabb over the summer, there were obviously a lot of really important and powerful conversations that were being had over the summer with the Black Lives Matter movement and many other topics. And so in light of that, the building the program for this semester was a really fulfilling process, because it really made me look at that traditional choral canon, if you will, and kind of look for pieces that haven't always had equal representation, whether it be the style of the genre of the piece or the composers of the piece being from different backgrounds, such as different genders, different races or religions, that always have not had an equal footing within the Western fine art canon. And so that was a really interesting process. And I think we built a program that really does a good job of highlighting those different pieces. And it's been fulfilling for those students who, like we've talked about, aren't able to travel to experience these different things. We do as best we can get to taste and reflect the different experiences that people in our country do have without leaving the campus, which is nice.
Are you performing mostly modern pieces, pieces that were written in the last 10 years or by living composers, or are you kind of going back to find these unheard pieces from an era where when they were not as well represented and then bring them into light in the modern era?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It is a good mix of both, I would say. We made a concerted effort to not simply pick pieces by composers who were marginalized or represented and include those pieces basically as just tokenism. We want to highlight those pieces and those composers and elevate them to the status of the other pieces that exist in the canon, because they do deserve to be there. They hadn't been included in the canon because of other issues, not because of the quality of the music. And so the music that we included some that aren't in the canon previously by solidified composers, and as well as throwing in composers who might not have had that equal footing but deserve to because of the quality of their music. For example, one of the pieces that I have in my program is O Vos Omnes by Tomás Luis de Victoria, a Counter-Reformation composer who is well known within the European Western classical tradition. And to pair that with other pieces that deserve to hold equal footing and prominence because of the quality of the music of a piece like the previous piece in the program is by Sonder Choi, who is a contemporary American Filipino composer based in LA. And so that dichotomy is really important to highlight and really talk about how they both do hold equal footing, because both are equally powerful and competent compositions that deserve to be heard and be performed and be exposed to by the students. And so it's been a really fulfilling path to be able to include two pieces that are so different. And there's other examples too in the program, but yeah, it's been cool.
Aaron, could I just amplify here, because Michael is saying exactly right. I mean, he and I had several conversations during the summer, and I think one of the dangers, and coming from a sort of a long tradition in the business here, one of the dangers for choral rep for us was to say, okay, I'm going to do my Brahms, I'm doing Bach, I'm doing Beethoven. Okay, then at the end, I'll do two African American spirituals, and there's my representation. Well, that really kind of does it a disservice because it says, here's our music. Now I'm going to end with this type of music. You see, it mm-hmm. leaves you with a lot of excitement and rhythm. But we know that spirituals, that is not really the purpose of most of those spirituals. It's a much deeper, more profound function within the culture. And so as Michael was saying, one of our great joys, I think he and I could say we, if I can use that pronoun, Michael, I think mm-hmm. you would agree that when he talks about doing a Saunders Choi, American Filipino, following it by a more traditional piece, we are saying, look, here is some music that is equal. Here is music that is valuable. It's not, okay, I'm doing all women composers in this section. Okay, now I'm doing Brahms and Bach and Beethoven. So we're trying to decide that, or we're trying not to tell people to decide what is really valuable and then sort of appropriation of the style. Mm. This past fall, for example, I did the Bach Magnificat with Choral Union. And along with the Bach Magnificat, we programmed the Ballad of the Brown King. This was by Margaret Bonds, who was a mid-20th century composer and pianist, African-American woman. Mm-hmm. And she told the Christmas story from the perspective of Balthazar, the African king who was one of the three wise men. So it's an effort to no longer say, look, I'm judging this is good because it's been around for 300 years. And this is something that's okay, and we'll do this just to show that we're making an effort. There's a difference between equal value and appropriation.
I remember that performance, by the way. That was great.
Thank you.
But now, of course, we're in a slightly different time now, and and performance is it looks a lot different. So when I hear you both talking about developing this program, are you performing? Is Hit Street Harmony, is Choral Union or any of the choral groups
currently
performing?
Yeah, this is a different situation, of course, this year that we cannot safely hold a public concert at this point. So we have set up a schedule. We have what we call in the School of Music Monday mashups. Mm-hmm. And each Monday evening at 7, we have another concert. Sometimes, I think it's last time, it was several jazz ensembles. We've had one choral Monday mashup, and we have another one coming up. Michael, is it October 19th?
Yes, it's Monday the 19th.
Monday the 19th at 7. So Hit Street will be represented. University Singers will have four different small choirs. At University Singers will be represented. Concert Chorale, directed by my colleagues, Dr. Brandon Boyd and Emily Edgington Andrews, will be represented. And this will be the second, as I said, of the virtual concerts, we're calling them. And then we have another one coming in early December. And we will basically sing a concert, but without an audience. It's
okay.
Recorded in the wonderful new facility we have, the Singfield Music Center. And fortunately, we have the technology to make this a very nice experience, both audible and video available to the public.
That now that concert actually would have aired this last Monday on the 19th, but the great thing about these Monday mashups and a lot of what the School of Music is doing right now is that they're all available for you to watch whenever you like on the YouTube channel that the School of Music hosts. So that's a great deal. And thanks so much for putting that program together and bringing these to us. And we'll definitely have you on again before December to talk about the next one. What was on this most recent program?
Yeah, well, for Hit Street Harmony, we actually sang and recorded the first piece to our program. We're kind of recording them out of order a little bit, just based on pedagogically where we are in the semester, but there is a flow to the program. And so the piece that you will have heard this past Monday will be When Thunder Comes by Maria Isabel Valverde, who is a contemporary half-Indigenous transgender composer. And she does a lot of fantastic work in Texas as well as throughout the United States on composing and arranging and guest conducting, and is a vocal advocate for LGBTQ rights as well. And the piece is actually a very interesting in the program, I call it our call to action. It's our first call to action. And it is a pretty strong statement to those who might have not felt compelled to hold opinions or give voice to those who had been marginalized within our society. And so the key line of the piece is the civil righteous will no longer be meek. And so it's really calling of attention to those who maybe haven't been able to or haven't been willing to invest or haven't had to because of their demographic, really confront these difficult conversations and really grabbing one by the shoulders and saying, look at these things that have been happening in our country, and actually have an opinion on it, not telling us what we should think, but actually start to pay attention so we can have more people view these things and have eyes on it. And so there are several references to several different civil rights leaders around the first half of the 20th century, really, that are included in the text of it. But it's really that call to action that sets up the program for the rest of it to explore those different underrepresented groups in our society. I also conduct one of these small groups of university singers. And for that ensemble, we actually recorded a piece by R. Nathaniel Dett, an African-American composer who his parents were slaves and emigrated to Canada before he came back to the United States in the early 20th century and wrote Let Us Cheer the Weary Traveler, which was actually taught and conducted by a PhD student who's in my ensemble, Kendra Franks, and she did a fantastic job with them. And that is an African-American spiritual. Yes, and so again, giving voice to those composers who hadn't always had equal footing. R. Nathaniel Dett was a very, very prominent figure within early 20th century music as well.
It sounds like it's a great program, and now I'll have to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
Well, if I could say that Michael's part of this complete program with University Singers, as I said, instead of one group, I've divided it this year into four groups of 12 or 13 singers as a way to sort of accommodate some of our safety precautions. And so we have four choirs. It's about the past. Another choir is about the journey or the struggle. And then you have the current choir, the now, which is of course, reflecting our current culture. And then the fourth choir, as I call the future, is what we're looking for once we get past this current state of the world here. So we had the first choir conducted by graduate student Amelia Lufkin, and she did a prayer by Issei Barnwell. Barnwell is one of the founders of Sweet Honey in the Rock. Mm-hmm. And it's entitled Prayer, and O Lord, Must I Do Unto Others Before They Do Unto Me? And it talks a little bit about the reflection of the treatment of marginalized people. The journey is the one that Michael mentioned, with Kendra Franks conducting the Nathaniel Dett piece. Another graduate conductor, Jeremy Wagner, conducted Mani Ma Amin, arranged by Applebaum. This is a Hebrew song associated with those who were reflecting and struggling during the Holocaust. And it is a part of the traditional service in the Jewish liturgy. And then the final choir that I conduct is Lord, We Give Thanks to Thee, a very upbeat traditional anthem by Undine Smith Moore, another African-American woman, a prominent composer and pianist and professor in Virginia, which was also just invigorating and a piece that, like Michael mentioned, really deserves to be part of the traditional choral repertoire, but has not always been the case.
And is this something that you intend to continue to do throughout into the future, looking at that, giving this platform to these formerly underrepresented or currently underrepresented artists and composers through the future?
Absolutely. This is, as I said, I think over the past 5 or 10 years, and for me personally, it's particularly since 2015, it's made me evaluate, I guess, in a sense, my platform. I mean, I'm involved in the arts. Is the art simply for me to sit back and say it's beautiful, let's continue? Or is this an opportunity to use the arts to say what's happening in our society? What can I do to say we need to discuss this in a civil, responsible manner. I won't delve too deeply, but this afternoon I'm part of a convocation where I'm discussing with some students and my colleague from Prairie View A&M, Dr. Jan Taylor, which is an HBCU in Texas, our experience of performing William Grant Stills, and they lynched him on a tree. As you can imagine, that's a pretty difficult situation. And this work, although in 1940 was commissioned by the New York Philharmonic, has only been performed on a handful of times due to the difficult nature. Mm-hmm. But that experience of interacting with an HBCU, performing with HBCU, the kind of conversations it opened up for us, I can't imagine any other vehicle being as effective to allow young adults to look at each other in the eye and say, this is a topic we have to talk about. We can't avoid or ignore it. And so the arts as a vehicle, whether they're visual, whether it's musical arts, or whether it's theater, these are ways that we can open conversations and look at each other and say, there is an issue we have to talk about. And sometimes I don't even recognize it's an issue until we visit. So I don't think I will ever change. I hope I don't ever change, you know, for as long as I'm in the business. And I do hope that the students that come through here will at least consider these issues in a way that they might not have considered had they not come through the program. And I think it's a really important part of how we work within our world today.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for doing that. And for, you know, investing in these pieces and investing in the students and the arts in general. It's always, you know, the arts have always been a platform for social change from,
right,
you know, for as right long as we've been making art as humanity. So that's right great. And with that, I'll just say thanks for taking some time out of your day to come on and talk to us here on Mizzou Music. Paul Crabb, the professor of choral directing here at the University of Missouri, and graduate student Michael Sauer, also director of Hit Street Harmony. Go check out the YouTube channel for these Monday mashups. You can go back and watch every single one of them. And we look forward to seeing more in the future. And take care. And thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having us on here, Aaron. Always a joy.
Yes, thank you, Aaron.
Absolutely. Thank you.